Okay, we're up to Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yud Beis. Okay, that's on page 546 to 547. The Mishnah starts off by saying, Hillel v'Shammai kiblu mehem. We had spoken over the past two times about the two gedolei ador, Shmaya and Avtalion. And Shmaya and Avtalion in turn raised up Talmidim, Hillel and Shammai. Of all of the zugos, of all of the pairs of Nesiim and Av Beis Din, that right, 100%. But I think it's fair to say that of all of the names we've mentioned, Hillel and Shammai are probably the most famous, particularly because each of them had numerous Talmidim to the point where they had a Beis Medrash that was associated with them, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, who existed for many, many years thereafterwards and had many, many debates that are recorded, you know, throughout the Mishnayos. We also know a lot in particular about Hillel. Hillel is referred to very often as Hillel HaZaken, Hillel the Elder, mostly because there were other Hillels later on in Jewish history, but of course this Hillel, the older Hillel, was the most prominent. What we know about him putting together various different Gemaras is as follows. Hillel was actually born in Bavel, and he was born to a family that had Yichus on his father's side. The family came from Shevet Binyamin. They were descended from Binyamin. On his mother's side, they came from the family of David HaMelech. Hillel, again, as we mentioned, was born in Bavel, went to Eretz Yisrael with the specific intention of learning by Shmaya and Avtalion, the two Rebbeim who were mentioned in the previous Mishnayos. And again, we mentioned about 2 weeks back that Hillel's devotion to Shmaya and Avtalion was, and the learning that they represented was considerable. We mentioned the Gemara in Yuma that describes how one Friday Hillel wasn't able to afford the entrance fee to get into the Beis Medrash, so he went up and onto the roof of the Beis Medrash and was listening to the Shir Shmaya and Avtalion through the skylight. It started snowing. Hillel didn't care. He was transfixed by the Shir, and basically he was, you know, lying there listening to the Shir as the snow continued to fall. Shmaya and Avtalion stopped the Shir. They went home, you know, to get ready for Shabbos, and Hillel was stuck up there on the roof underneath all of the snow. Shabbos morning, Shmaya and Avtalion come into the Beis Medrash. One says to the other, you know, it's a funny thing. It looks like, you know, the skylight is being blocked by something. And they go up, they take a look, they find Hillel there, frozen under the snow. They bring him down, they light a fire, the Mechal Shabbos, in order to save him. It's a situation of Pikuach Nefesh. And they comment, you know, for someone like this, it's certainly worthwhile to be Mechal Shabbos. So we quoted that story before because of what it says about Shmaya and Avtalion and their devotion, A, to Hillel, but also their tremendous humanity. They didn't send Talmidim to go get Hillel. They went themselves and, you know, pulled him off of the roof and warmed him up again. It also shows the extent of the relationship that Hillel had with Shmaya and Avtalion, that he was so anxious to hear their Torah that he was literally oblivious to anything else that was going on around him.
Many years ago.
Yeah.
I always picture Hillel as a kid, Bobby Grossi gets Torah.
Right, so.
I mean, I know I can climb up to
So the term Hillel HaZaken probably was only used later on in history, probably when he enrolled in elementary school. He didn't fill out his papers, Hillel HaZaken. You know, this, and it was probably even during his lifetime, I'm not sure that they referred to him as Hillel HaZaken. They started referring to him as Hillel HaZaken when there were other great Hillels later on in history. So this was a way of saying that's the old Hillel. You know, Hillel the first, we would say, you know, as opposed to the younger Hillels. He presumably was not a little boy, because remember, he did not grow up in Eretz Yisrael. The story took place in Eretz Yisrael. He grew up in Bavel and traveled from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael to hear Torah from Shmaya and Avtalion. So, again, was he 50 when this happened? I don't know if he was 50, but I don't think he was 5 either. You know, in other words, he was old enough that he had left Bavel on his own to come to Eretz Yisrael to learn by these two gedolim. So I assume, at the very least, he was a teenager, you know, when the story happened. I mean, if not older than that. The the Gemara tells a story as to how Hillel came to prominence. Again, Hillel was the prominent student of Shmai Naphtalion, but it did not seem as if on the passing of Shmai Naphtalion that Hillel right away assumed the position of being the Nasi, of being the head of the Sanhedrin. Instead, it seems like Shmai Naphtalion passed away and there was a little bit of a gap in terms of the leadership. And again, this may have something to do with the politics at the time. As we pointed out, during the time of Shmai Naphtalion, there was the Rabbanon were not held in the highest esteem necessarily by everyone. The government was very much a Hellenized government. And, you know, there may not have been a clear line of succession from Shmai Naphtalion to Hillel. Gemara tells the story that one year, Erev Pesach came out on Shabbos, as it does every couple of years. But there was confusion as to whether the Korban Pesach should be shechted on that day, which was Shabbos. Erev Pesach, typically the Korban Pesach is shechted. Does the Korban Pesach push aside the observance of Shabbos? So there was a lot of discussion back and forth. There was a group of Chachamim called the Bnei Beseira, the sons of Beseira, who it seems like were making the major decisions at that time. They were not sure what to do. And somebody told them, you know, there's a man named Hillel who came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael and learned by Shmaya and Naphtalion. He's a big Talmud Chacham. Maybe he knows the answer. So they go and call Hillel, who, again, up until that time seems to have been kind of below the radar. They call him Hillel. Hillel, through a bunch of proofs and demonstrations, takes the position that the Korban Pesach can be brought on an Erev Shabbos. They go back and forth with argumentation, and finally Hillel says, look, this is what I heard from Shmaya Naphtalion, my Rebbeim. They say, oh, you heard it from Shmaya Naphtalion, your Rebbeim? Okay, that's the end. Why don't you tell us that to begin with? You know, that's the end of the story. And it seems like from that time in, Hillel rose to prominence because he was recognized as being the superior Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. He became the Nasi. His sons after him retained the title of Nasi for 15 generations. So he himself really began, in a sense, a dynasty of Jewish leadership. Hillel was an incredibly patient, loving person. We see that time and time again in so many of the famous stories which are told about Hillel. Gemara famously says in Shabbos how a convert, a would-be convert, once came before Shammai and said, teach me the entire Torah, while standing on one foot. Shammai drove him away. The same convert came to Hillel, said, teach me the entire Torah while I stand on one foot. Hillel said, okay, whatever is hateful to you, don't do to your friend. That's the essence of Torah. Everything else is a commentary. Now go learn. And again, this is cited as an example of sort of the patience that Hillel had for people who would drive most of us crazy, you know, and we'd get rid of them right away. You know, he had the patience to be able to deal with those kinds of people. Gemara also tells Masechta Shabbos, again, right around that same place, the story of Hillel in the bathhouse. What was the story? Two men made a bet with one another. One said, Hillel is so patient, I bet you can't get him angry. The other said, yeah, you're on. I'll take you on for a bet for 400 zuzim that I can make Hillel angry. So it was Friday afternoon. Hillel was in the bathhouse getting ready for Shabbos. And the guy goes and starts running through the bathhouse, knocking on the doors. Is Hillel here? Is Hillel here? Yes, I'm here. How can I help you? And he asks him some kind of nonsensical question about, you know, how come the people from this region have squinty eyes. So instead of throwing the guy out and saying, it's Erev Shabbos, I'm in the bathhouse, could you really come back some other time? Hillel gives him an answer. A few minutes later, he comes back. Another nonsensical question. Instead of throwing him out, Hillel gives him an answer. A few minutes later, he comes back. Another nonsensical question. Again, Hillel gives him an answer. And finally, the guy explodes. And he says, if you're really Hillel, I hope there's nobody else like you who's ever, you know, born to the Jewish people. Why? What's so terrible? You lost me 400 zuzim. So the guy says, so Hillel says back to the guy, my dear son, it's better that you should lose many times 400 zuzim rather than you should make me angry. Right? It's not good for Klal Yisrael if I get angry. That's the kind of easygoing, patient disposition that Hillel is described as having, he was beloved in his own lifetime and revered in his own lifetime. We find there's a Gemara in Masechta Sota that describes that the Chachamim were once convened, a bas kol, a heavenly voice came out from the heavens, and the bas kol said, Yesh bochem adam echad sheroi shetishra shechina alav. Among you in this convocation is a certain person who is worthy to have the Shechina descend upon him in a way similar to the Nevi'im. Ela she'ein dara roi lekach. The only reason that he doesn't become a Navi is because the generation is not worthy of having a Navi in their midst. So said the bas kol. It didn't identify about whom the bas kol was speaking, but says the Gemara, Nafnu einehem behilel azakein. Everybody turned around at that point and looked at Hillel, and they understood that he was obviously the person to whom the bas kol was referring. So again, in his own time, he was revered and recognized as someone who was a gadol in all senses of the term, particularly in the sense of being a gadol in midos, and was very much respected for that. That idea of being a gadol in midos comes forth in this very first statement that's attributed to Hillel in Pirkei Avos. There are going to be three statements which we're going to read about, not all of them today, but three statements recorded in Pirkei Avos as statements of Hillel. This Mishnah Yud Beis, and then the next two Mishnayos Yud Gimel and Yud Dalet, two other statements from Hillel. So his very first statement just fits in beautifully with his personality. Hillel Omer, Hillel used to say, Heve mitamidov shel Aaron. You should aspire to be one of the students of Aaron HaKohen. Ohev shalom, virodev shalom, loving peace, pursuing peace. Ohev esabrios, loving people, umekarvam haTorah, and bringing them close to the Torah. On this statement, the Sefer Avos de Rebbe Nosson elaborates and provides us with the source for two stories which are also probably familiar to us, stories that speak about the qualities that Aaron HaKohen possessed in bringing people together. Hillel says we should aspire to be like Aaron HaKohen. So the Avos de Rebbe Nosson tells us certain famous stories about the way that Aaron HaKohen was involved in making peace among people. Again, just the Avos de Rebbe Nosson is a work that in a sense is sort of the earliest commentary we have on Pirkei Avos. It's one of the so-called Masechtos Ketanos, the minor tractates that are printed together with the rest of the Shas. And Pirkei Avos is 6 chapters, the Avos de Rebbe Nosson is like 40-something chapters, again elaborating tremendously on the statements that are contained within Pirkei Avos. So in Avos de Rebbe Nosson, we read the following. In what sense was Aaron HaKohen an Ohev Shalom and a Rodev Shalom, someone who loved peace, someone who pursued peace? Kishahoya Aaron Mahalech Baderech. When Aaron was just walking on the path, when he was, walking on the road, Pogabo Ba'odom Rosha. If it would happen every once in a while, Aaron HaKohen would meet someone who was a Rosha, was a wicked person. So instead of spitting, either on the floor or in the guy's face, Aaron HaKohen would always greet the person, regardless of whether he was a tzaddik or a rasha. He would always greet the person, how you doing, nice to see you. He would give him salutations. Lamachar, the following day, Bikesh Oso Ha'ish Lavor Aveira. The next day, the rasha would wake up in the morning and would say, okay, it's a beautiful day, the sun is shining, it's a great day to do Averas. Great day to go out and sin. Amar, but then this Rasha would say to himself, Oili, but woe is to me. Heyach esro einai achar kach ve'eres aharon. If I'm going to do an Avera today, and I know that I'm going to meet Aaron on the road tomorrow, and Aaron HaKohen is going to give me that big smile and ask me how I'm doing, and is going to want to know everything that's up with me, how can I look Aaron in the face when just the day before I engaged in some terrible Avera? Boshti hemenu, I'm embarrassed from Aaron. Shenastan li shalom. He was so nice to me just the day before. He asked how I was doing. He was so kind to me. How could I bear to sin knowing that I have that image of Aaron HaKohen in my mind? Nimsa oso ish monei atzmo mino avera. And it would turn out that this individual would prevent himself, would hold back from doing an avera, all because Aaron was nice to him. Right? What's that? No, or, you know, there was a certain image that Aaron HaKohen had. Again, you know, on some level, I think we can relate to this. You know, you're in the presence of a very, very big tzaddik. You know, so even if you're not such a good person under normal circumstances, but it's hard to sin with the image of a tzaddik, you know, impressed onto your brain. That's I think, part of the rationale behind Gedolim pictures, right? In other words, if the Chofetz Chaim is looking down on me from the dining room table, you know, so maybe I'll think twice before I speak Lashon Hara. So that's one famous story that's told about Aaron HaKohen, and then the next story told by the Avos Rabbi Nosson is arguably even a more famous story. If two people were arguing with one another, so Aaron would go and he would sit with one of the parties, and he would say to him, my dear son, do you know what your friend is saying just a few blocks down? His heart is disturbed, he's ripping his clothes, he's very upset over the spat that you're having with one another. Omer, Oili, Heyach, Esso, Es Einai, the Eres Chaveri, Voshti Eimenu, Shani Hu, Shisarachti Olov, Uyoshev, Eslo, Shemas, Ashemesir, Kino Milibo. The guy would respond, oh my, really? Our fight is causing that friend of mine so much pain? He's so upset over the fact that we're not speaking to one another? I feel so bad. How could I have caused him so much pain? And Aaron would continue to talk to him in such and such a vein until the person's anger would subside. Then, Aaron HaKohen would go and sit with the other person. And he would say to him, Bini, Aaron would go to the other party and he would tell him exactly the same thing. You know, the other fellow, he's so upset. You know, he's so broken over the fact that you're having a fight, you're having a spat with one another. He really feels bad about it. Oh, really? I made him feel so bad. I feel terrible, right? And eventually, he would get both of them to calm down. When the two parties would finally meet up, they would hug one another, they would kiss one another, and they would make up. And that, says the Avos Rebbe Nosson, is why the Pasuk says that when Aaron died, the entire house of Israel mourned for him for 30 days, something which it doesn't even say about Moshe Rabbeinu, because Aaron HaKohen really extended himself time and time again to try to bring people together. It's interesting to note that the version of the story which is told in the Avos Rebbe Nosson is a little bit different than the way sometimes the story is told without reference to the original source. I remember growing up, the story was always told as Aaron would go to each of the parties and say, the other guy wants to make up with you. That's not exactly the way it's presented in the original source, and presumably for good reason, because, you know, if Aaron goes to each one and says, the other guy wants to make up with you, and then they get together, and it becomes clear that they don't want to make up with one another, so then I'm not sure that you really helped anything at all. The way the actual source presents it is Aaron went to each side and said, look, the other guy feels badly about what happened. You know, it's there's a big jump from feeling badly to being ready to make up. We understand nobody's ready to make up over here, but, you know, you should just know that the other side feels badly about what happened. And, you know, the truth is that's stretching the truth a little bit less than it is to say that the other person is actually ready and anxious to wait to make up. A, it minimizes the amount of truth that has to be stretched. You're allowed to stretch the truth in order to make shalom between people. But if you stretch the truth so much that it breaks, you know, and it's self-defeating, because then they get together and they realize that, you know, really nobody wanted to make up over here. So at a certain point, they just have tainus to one another, and probably tainus and Aaron HaKohen, who, you know, told them a bald-faced lie, you know, in trying to get them back together. So again, that's why it's always good to go back to the original source and read the story the way Chazal tell the story. You know, sometimes when it's told over in a different context, it's embellished in a way that loses some of the original story itself. But again, all of that is what Aaron HaKohen did, and Hillel says we should aspire to all of those things, to be like Aaron HaKohen. Certainly that characterized the way that Hillel himself would function and would deal with people. The author of the Nesiva Shalom, the Slonim Rebbe, raises an interesting question on this Mishnah. He says, why is it that Shalom is so important? On the surface, it's a deceptively simple question. What do you mean? Of course Shalom is important. Okay, but why is Shalom important? I mean, you know, it's nice, it's more pleasant when people get along with one another. But what's so fundamental about Shalom that we're supposed to try to do whatever we can to create Shalom in a given situation? Chazal, in many sources, go on about the importance of Shalom. They point out, among other things, that our brachos of Shmoneh Esrei end off every day with a bracha for Shalom. Clearly, that's considered to be of paramount importance. But why is it so important? Well, what's so incredible about Shalom in the end of the day? So he offers the following very fascinating explanation. Much of what our religious life is supposed to be about, says the Nesiva Shalom, is to come to the recognition that ein od milavado, that there's nothing in the world other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls everything, and even though we have the impression sometimes that there are many different forces at play in the world, in reality that's an illusion. And ein od milavado, you know, ultimately everything is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no any other force in the world that seems to be operating is simply operating at the orders, at the control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a tremendous avoda to get to that point, to recognize that a world which seems to have many, many different facets and aspects to it is all really unified under the control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One way that we can bring ourselves to recognize Ein Od Milvado, that there is an ultimate shalom in a spiritual sense in the world, is to help us recognize on a more mundane level shalom among people. Because the truth is, when we look out there at people in the world, people seem to be very multifaceted, and you know, everybody has their own perspective, and everybody has their own way of looking at things, everybody has their own way of doing things and the like, and there are a lot of you know, different disputes between people and the like. But the more that we can bring people together and create shalom in the world itself, the more we can come to a recognition of, on a spiritual level, that the world itself is unified under Hashem's control. In other words, the more we make shalom between people, the more we're able to recognize the idea of Ein Od Milavado, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the entire world, and to recognize the Achdus Hashem, the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we can create Achdus among people, it can help us recognize the Achdus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. So says the Slonim Rebbe. That actually, although I don't think he says this in the piece, the you know, this idea of the Slonim Rebbe helps us understand, I think, another statement of Hillel HaZaken, which we referenced earlier in the Shir, which causes the Mefarshim to ask many, many questions. So we mentioned before that when the prospective Ger came before Hillel asking to be taught the entire Torah on one foot, so Hillel said to him, no big deal, the basic principle of Torah is the alach sani lechavrach lo sa'avid. Whatever is hateful to you, don't do to your friend. Everything else is commentary, idach beirusha, zil gemar. Now go learn the rest of the Torah, and that will just, you know, kind of fill in the details in that one statement. So many mefarshim ask the question. I mean, it's very nice, but is that really an accurate summary of Judaism? I mean, you know, it's an accurate summary of a very maybe a non-Orthodox Judaism. That's what it sounds like. You know, just be nice to people. Don't be nasty to people. Yeah, that's really all we believe. All of Judaism can be summed up in don't be nasty to people. Shabbos, Kashrus, Taharas HaMishpacha, right? That's it. You know, it's just don't be nasty to people. Have a good heart. That's really what Yiddishkeit is all about. Right? I mean, that, you know, there are people out in the world who say that, but they're usually not from, you know, who make that statement. So it's interesting. Rashi over there on that Gemara actually says, the Allah Sani, whatever is hateful to you, l'chavrach lo savid, don't do to your friend. You know who your friend is? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Don't do anything which is going to get HaKadosh Baruch Hu upset, or that would be hateful towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so that's one way of addressing the issue. But again, that's not the simple interpretation what Hillel said. Basically, it sounds like Hillel was saying, don't be nasty to other people. Okay, I agree. Nobody would say, do be nasty to other people. I mean, we hope not. But is that an accurate summary of Judaism? That's maybe an accurate summary of the Mitzvah Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. How did the Mitzvah Bein Adam L'Makom fit into that rubric that Hillel is saying? So according to the Slonimer, I think one perhaps can answer as follows. Creating shalom between people is the way of helping us recognize Ein Od Milavado, recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one and only and controls the entire world without exception. So if you're really nice to people, if you're not nasty to people, if you bring about shalom between people, that's a step not only towards improving your Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, but ultimately it will help you with your Bein Adam L'Makom also, because the more you recognize the concept of Achdus among people, the more you'll be able to really wrap your head around the idea of the Achdus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the first step in really performing the mitzvahs is to recognize that God, and only God, is the one who can command us what to do. If a person doesn't believe in the oneness of Hashem, so why should I keep kosher? Okay, God told me to keep kosher, but maybe there's some other force that's telling me not to keep kosher, right? Now, the building block, the first step in recognizing HaKadosh, in following the mitzvahs, is recognizing the Achdus Hashem, the oneness of Hashem, which is why the basic thing which we say every single day, the Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, so everything flows from that, and Chazal called that the Kabbalah Sal Malchus Shemayim. In other words, when you say that Hashem is Echad, that Hashem is one, so the natural follow-up to that is that, and therefore, whatever Hashem tells me to do, I'm going to follow, because there is no one else besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately. So perhaps that's a way of explaining, you know, based on the Slonimer, this idea that Hillel said in a different context.
Well, if you think about it, if you're trying to connect peace between people, and a side is giving in, the other side is giving in, you realize already that you're not so much in control. You can give over the idea that there's something else out there that could lead you to realize that Hashem could control the way. What am I fighting for that?
Right. So in other words, if I'm ready to give in on an earthly level, it helps train me to give in, you know, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well.
You could think he did it, but like if you think that really Hashem had him do this, he did this for something.
Right, right. If I recognize that, you know, Hashem was the one who sent him against me, orchestrated everything, right, could be.
I think that if you're at peace with people, you're at peace with yourself, and you can perform everything if you're. You're not that
concentrated in anything you're doing. Right, right. It seeps down into everything that you do. If you're an angry, nasty person, right, right. You find it difficult to do mitzvahs at all. You're right. No, 100%. If a person is at peace with other people, it enables him to concentrate on all the things that he has his obligations to do. Right, right, 100%. So the Slonimer goes one step further, and he makes the following statement. Why was it Davka Aaron who was involved in making peace between people? So I think ordinarily, you know, what we think of is, well, it happened to be, in addition to all of his other wonderful traits, Aaron HaKohen is a really nice guy. He was a nice guy. He was talented at making peace between people. and you know, he was good at it. So, you know, it's fortunate that somebody who was a leader of the Jewish people happened to be a very nice, good peacemaker, you know, as part of the deal. So says the Slonim, no, the fact that Aaron HaKohen was an Oev Shalom and a Rodev Shalom wasn't just a function of his personality. You know, he was good at making peace with people. The fact that he was an Oev Shalom and a Rodev Shalom was part of his job description. Because the job description of Kohanim is to connect Klal Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the Kohen does. The Kohen has two main functions when there's a Beis HaMikdash. The obvious function of the Kohen when there's a Beis HaMikdash is to bring Karbonos and to supervise what's going on in the Beis HaMikdash on that level. The Psukim say that the role of the Kohen is also to be a teacher of Torah to Klal Yisrael. The Pasuk in Malachi, Yiftif Sei Kohen Yishmeru Das, the Sora Yivak Shum Yipil, the lips of the Kohen will watch over knowledge and people will seek out Torah from him. So in other words, the role of the Kohen, probably even the main role of the Kohen, is to teach Torah. So those things are roles that the Kohen has to bring people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And says the Slonimer, as we've just explained, making peace between people is also a way of bringing them closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, either in the kind of esoteric way that the Slonimer himself is describing, you know, if you recognize Achdus between people, you'll come to recognize the Achdus Hashem, or maybe just on a very basic level, you know, if you're at peace with yourself, if you know, if you're in Ish Shalom, you'll be able to concentrate on your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a better kind of way. Either way, the role of the Kohen is to bring people closer to Hashem. So part of his job description is to make Shalom. It's not just like Aaron, you know, Aaron was a Kohen, but on the side he happened to be a nice guy and he was able to bring people together. No, part of being a Kohen is to bring people together. That's part of the job description which the Kohen has. Witness the fact that when the Kohanim blessed the people, the bracha recited before Birkas Kohanim is Asher Kiddushanu B'Kdushaso Shel Aaron V'Tzivanu Levarech Es Amo Yisrael. The Yava, Kadosh Baruch Hu told us that we have to bless the Jewish people with love. What do you mean you have to bless the Jewish people with love? Just bless the Jewish people, leave the love out of it. No, the love is an integral ingredient in the bracha, because that's what the Kohanim are trying to bring to Klal Yisrael. They're trying to engender in Klal Yisrael this sense of Shalom and Ava and getting along with one another, because ultimately you need all of that in order to be able to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's part of his job description. It's not just a side thing or a thing that he was particularly good at. That's his, yeah.
But if, you know, if there is Achdus between all the Kohanim, then there's Achdus between the Kohanim on another level, make Hashem happy.
100%. Right, right.
For no other reason,
right, right. But specifically, you know, the idea is to connect Hashem to the Jewish people. So by connecting the Jewish people to one another, that connects Hashem to the Jewish people, right? The that's why, says the Slonimer, Hillel says, "Hevi mi talmidov shel Aaron." You should be a talmid of Aaron HaKohen. What do you mean I should be a talmid of Aaron HaKohen?
Aaron HaKohen,
right, Aaron HaKohen had a particular talent. He was very good at making shalom between people. How does that translate to me? No, that wasn't just Aaron's talent, that was Aaron's job. So in other words, you know, we should be talmidim of Aaron. We should follow the same job that he was tasked with as being a Kohen. One last little thing that we'll add to this from the Tiferes Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz. So the Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz comments that we Hillel says at the end of the statement that like Aaron you should be oev es habrios, love people. That's the way our school translates it. So Tiferes Yisrael points out there are numerous words in Hebrew for people. You can have ohev es ha'anashim, ohev es ha'adam. What's ohev es habrios? So says the Tiferes Yisrael, words like adam and anashim imply people of stature. Brios literally means creatures. You should love creatures. And says the Tiferes Yisrael, in life, there are a lot of people you encounter who they may be people, but they strike you more as creatures than people. Right? In other words, they're not polished, they're kind of coarse, they make your life crazy. You know, you wouldn't say that they're dignified individuals. You know, to call them Adam or Anashim, you know.
We just don't know them well.
Right, true, right. But they come across closer to Brios, you know, to, you know, other creatures than they come across as being closer to human beings. Obviously, they're human beings. We're not trying to dehumanize them, but. You know, they're not people who make the greatest impression. What we're supposed to aspire to, says the Tiferes Yisrael in interpreting Hillel, is not just to be oev es ha'anashim. It's really not. It's really easy to love people who are dignified and pleasant to be with, and good people, and you enjoy their company. You know, that's not a big kunz. You should be oev es ha'brios. You should love those people who come across more as creatures than as human beings. Right? Yeah, they need it more. But that's also ultimately what we're supposed to be doing. You know, to like people who are fun to be around, you know, that's not too complicated. But you should be always habrios. You should love the people who are very miserable to be around. You know, and that's ultimately what Aaron HaKohen did as well. These two people got into a fight with one another, as described in the Avos to Rebbe Nassim. In all likelihood, they weren't the most pleasant people to be around in the first place. That's how they got into a fight. When Aaron HaKohen met the Rasha many times on the, you know, while walking on the path, and was nice to him, this was probably a Rasha that everybody else shunned, and nobody else wanted to talk to him. And Aaron gave him the time of day, and ultimately, as always, the Rav Nosson describes, it saved him from doing averus. Oevis habrios, you know, even if they're brios, they're just creatures, you know, they're not people that you'd usually think of being worthy of your attention. Nonetheless, you know, you have to show them the time of day, and you have to try to not just be polite to them, but be oev them, to love them. You know, which again is very easy to express in three words. It's a very tall order, you know, to try to actually carry out in real life. Bez Hashem, next week we do have the shiur.
As
well, before we get to 1:30, so just in terms, one thing at a time. So next door in the Orenstein, there's the very wonderful program run by Renewal about kidney donation. It's featuring both Gary Ambrose and Marty Shulman speaking about their respective roles in kidney donation. Really, in deference to this shiur, the program is starting with a reception at 10:30, but the program itself is not getting underway till 11 o'clock. That's actually in deference to the shiur over here. So we thank, you know, the organizers. So what that means practically in terms of us, you know, I'll give the shiur the regular time. I'll probably stop a little bit early, you know, to allow people to get over with enough time to get settled in for the... What's that?
Should we start early? That we'll start early?
We can start earlier, yeah. I want to start at 10?
Why not?
Yeah. Okay. Done? Start at 10? Okay. Get everybody over a little bit early. Right. So that's number one. Number two, just also this is a public service announcement. Next Sunday in the afternoon, there is a clothing drive, which will be held here at the shul between 1 and 5 p.m. in conjunction with Yad Leah, which is a very wonderful organization that sends clothes to Eretz Israel. It's based out of Passaic. So basically, again, the information is posted outside. If you want to bring by clothes that are lightly used that you'd like to pass on to Eretz Israel, please do so. There'll be a drop-off here between 1 and 5. The suggested donation per garbage bag is $18, and if you want to give more just to defray any costs, you know, certainly everything would be appreciated. So you can, we have Torah next week, we have Chesed next week, and all good things.
What kind of clothes they have to throw
to
people wear?
From past experience, they work with different communities in Eretz Yisrael, and they actually have a whole system. They have a whole system where they divide up, you know, which community, you know, there's whatever, you know, you'll figure it out, which community gets which kind of clothes.